It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We have to remember that when President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador took over on December 1st, it was clear that border enforcement would not be a priority. We walked across their border with Guatemala in January with live cameras rolling. Not a single officer was in sight. Well, 6 months later, the story changes. And after nearly a million Central American migrants surging through that country, Mexico now says the deployment of 6,000 National Guard troops will begin securing that border today, part of a larger plan to control the flow of migrants after pressure from President Trump's threat of tariffs. But is it too little too late? Mexico is struggling to deal with the crisis. Shelters in southern Mexico are bursting at the seams with overcrowding, horrible conditions, and rioting. And now they're seeing a surge of Africans from Cameroon, Angola, Togo, and the Congo. Central Americans still make up the majority, but U.S. Border Patrol officials tell us they're apprehending record number of African migrants just showing up, sometimes in large groups, on our border. And then there is the question of whether Mexico is any closer to agreeing to a safe third country agreement with the U.S. That would require migrants to seek asylum in Mexico rather than the U.S. Mexico releasing the text of a deal which indicates that after 45 days from today's deployment, if there are not results with respect to slowing this flow, then they will discuss additional efforts.
All right, so that was Griff Jenkins this morning on Fox News. Fox and Friends, Sandy Rios with you, and glad to be back. One of the things I was doing on Friday was a briefing at the White House in which they were talking about, in part, many, many things, but talking about this, the tariffs, threatened tariffs against Mexico and what the president was doing. And of course, there's no treaty. This is just the president saying, if you do not do something to help us reduce this crisis at the border, then we will slap tariffs. And so he delayed the tariffs. It's a wait and see thing, as Griff just described. If they don't really do a good faith effort of getting their troops on the southern border, the southern Mexico border, to stop illegal immigrants as they cross through Mexico to get into the United States, then the tariffs will be there. They'll be zapped with tariffs. It's just that clear, and it is just that right. And isn't it amazing that we cannot get our Congress to do anything? We cannot get them to do anything. We can't get anyone in Washington to do anything except President Trump. I just think that's astounding, and it's really disgusting, honestly disgusting. And so here we are. That's where we are. I'll tell you a little bit more about that briefing, hopefully, in the course of the morning. But Sally Pipes, who was our guest recently, who's an expert on Medicare for All, she was a former Canadian and has been a pundit that I have been talking with since I was in Chicago radio. She's written a great article about what just happened in California, because they've just... Governor Newsom has just signed a bill in which they're going to start covering medical costs of illegal immigrants, courtesy of taxpayer dollars. And so I said that like a Californian, dollars. Californians say dollars, dollars. Yeah, can't believe I just did that. Anyway, he's just signed a bill that would include undocumented immigrants, illegal immigrants, up to the age of 26. And this is going to, of course, put a strain on California's budget, but here's the deal. States then turn around and expect the federal government to subsidize their expenditures. So Senator Bill Cassidy has proposed a bill now to prevent Americans from subsidizing health care for illegal immigrants. He just presented it, and it would block states like California from forcing Americans to subsidize programs that expand benefits to illegal immigrants. Well, we'll see if it'll pass. But you know it won't pass. Won't pass in the House. You know, I just, I'm sure Bill Cassidy and others are feeling pressure from their constituents. Do something. Do something. Well, they're doing something. Very little. And maybe too little, too late. I don't know. It's very discouraging, I have to say. By the way, Sally Pipe's article is on Fox News. It's California's free health care for illegal immigrants, courtesy of the taxpayers. We'll put that on our Facebook page so that you can read it and be better informed about that. I'm sure that you heard that Sarah Huckabee Sanders is stepping down. That was really a jolt, wasn't it? Was for me. Very sad about that because I was skeptical of Sarah's abilities when she took that job. I just have to say it again publicly because I was. I didn't think she was the right person, and I couldn't have been more wrong. Sarah was probably the finest press secretary I've ever seen and experienced, really. I've never seen anyone field questions with more humor and grace and power, conviction. She's just been amazing. And for that, of course, she's being rewarded by being called a horrible person. And now the latest wrinkle, there's a move afoot by American Bridge to sign a petition called a hiring boycott against Sarah Sanders. Hello, we signed an open letter to America's CEOs demanding that they won't hire anyone from the Trump administration who was complicit in Trump's family separation policy. Trump just announced that Sarah Sanders, his longtime press secretary and avid liar from the White House podium, will be leaving his administration at the end of the month. Sanders will no doubt be looking for her next big gig, but CEOs must reject her resume. Sanders spread misinformation, deflected blame, and did her best to cover for Trump at the expense of the truth about the family separation policy. Of course, that's nonsense. Sarah's probably one of the most honest press secretaries they ever had, really one of the finest. And will you please remember this? See, what the left has been doing for so many decades, as long as I can remember, is destroying the good people, destroying their reputation to other good people. And the other good people are quick to listen and quick to believe. It's easy for the good people among us to be tainted to us where they have cooties. It's kind of icky. Oh, I don't know about that person because I've heard blank, fill in the blank. We are so susceptible to that. By we, I mean conservatives, I mean Christians, and I want to admonish you to stop that. And please do this. Instead of automatically giving some credence, I'm not saying you shouldn't ever give credence, keep it with wisdom, you measure everything. Could you immediately think the reason they are disparaging and hating on this particular person is because they are so good? They are such a threat? The greater the threat, the higher the level of truth, the more power a person punches, the more they're going to be attacked. That's the way it really is. And so keep that in mind, you know, as we enter the 2020 elections, because it's going to be ugly. You know, it always is. It always has been, you know. And speaking of opposition research, which is what candidates always do, they find out, and this is legitimate. You are running in a race, you're running against a person, and you find out that they cheated, that they did something, some action that would be objectionable if people knew about it, that they are, in fact, living a double life, or fill in the blanks. There are a lot of legitimate reasons why you want opposition research on your opponent, and it's up to you, really, to let the electorate know about that. Now, here's where we get into the confusion. Sometimes opposition research is just nonsense. There's no truth to it. It's lies. It's slander. Are taken in its whole. Maybe it's, you know, I remember one candidate in Illinois a few years ago. It's been several years ago now. He was really high in the polls running for Senate. His name escapes me in the moment, but they unsealed his divorce documents. And the details of that divorce document, that personal thing between him and his wife, whatever he did and whatever they did, was made public, and he lost the race. And see, that's opposition research too, but that is unfair. That is, the record should never have been unsealed, but somebody got a hold of them. So see, there's opposition research, and then there's opposition research, which brings us to this whole big dust-up about President Trump and his interview with George Stephanopoulos. And by the way, to me, I'll just tell you right up front, the biggest mistake President Trump did was, why in heaven's name would he let George Stephanopoulos sit with him in Air Force One, in the limo, in his office, and talk to him and observe him and have the opportunity to use every word and every phrase against him, because that's what George does and that's what George is doing. See, this is, I think, one of Trump's big weaknesses, is I think he thinks that he can win people. He's so optimistic. He thinks that he can, if he can just talk to them, you know, that somehow He can bring them to his side, but he doesn't still. There's a naivety that just kind of surprises me. So George did what George does. And so let's listen to, first of all, the media is going apoplectic over the conversation where President Trump seemed to say, why, sure, he'd be fine with opposition research from foreign powers. And that, according to them, is a horror of all horrors. But I'll get to that in just a second. This is Chris Wallace interviewing Mike Pompeo. I just want you to hear how Mike Pompeo handled this. Let's listen.
Is accepting oppo research from a foreign government right or wrong?
Chris, you know, you asked me not to call any of your questions today ridiculous. You came really close right there. President Trump has been very clear. He clarified his remarks later. He made it very clear. Even in his first comments, he said, I'd do both. He said he'd call the FBI.
He said maybe I'd do both.
President Trump has been very clear that he will always make sure that he gets it right for the American people, and I'm confident he'll do that here as well.
Well, at the risk of getting your ire, the president told Fox and Friends on Friday, and I agree, he kind of walked it back.
Didn't walk it back, Chris.
Yes, he did. He said maybe on Thursday, and then on Friday on Fox and Friends, he said he'd listen first, and then if the information was bad, that he would take it to the FBI or the Attorney General. But he also made it clear to George Stephanopoulos that he did not see this as foreign interference. The country, sir, and I don't have to tell you, has a long history dating back from to George Washington in saying that foreign interference in our elections is unacceptable.
Chris, President Trump believes that, too. I have nothing further to add. I came on to talk about foreign policy, and I think the third time you've asked me about a Washington piece of silliness that chased down a story that is inconsistent with what I've seen President Trump do every single day.
A Washington piece of silliness. I love that. And I think it's true. I want to make my point on this as much as I can. So what did President Trump say to George? Well, let's listen.
Your campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country, Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI if I thought there was something wrong. But when somebody comes up with oppo research, right, they come up with oppo research. Oh, let's call the FBI. The FBI doesn't have enough agents to take care of it. But you go and talk honestly to congressmen. They all do it. They always have. And that's the way it is. It's called oppo research.
All right. So let's talk about this just for a second, as much as I can. This, what drives me crazy is the inability of the American people to think clearly. We've just lost our powers of reasoning, and the press is great at exploiting that. And George is doing that, most definitely, and so are the other reporters. The president was just being honest. Look, if a country called up and said, we have reason to believe that your opponent, you know, murdered someone here in 1973, we got the police reports and we know, or raped someone or whatever, you can't take that call. Because according to George, that's interference with the election. No, interference with the election is interference with the voting process. It's propagandizing the people in ways that can't be managed by our government. It is sending workers over, like President Obama did to Bibi Netanyahu in Israel. He sent people over to work against Bibi Netanyahu. That was interference in an election. But if you have information that's true on someone you're running against and someone from a foreign power knows about this information and it can be verified, it's perfectly legitimate to use that information. It's perfectly legitimate because they would be in a position to know things that you wouldn't know. The president was being honest about that. The problem with what's happening with the president is that the information they used from Russia and the dossier, which no one seems to mention, that Hillary Clinton was the one who reached out to the Russians for that dossier, was not true. It was lies. It was propaganda. But somehow we can't figure that out. So anything that you say, if he just says your opponent has white hair and uses coloring in their hair, that is interfering with the election, said George Stephanopoulos. And there's so much more to say about that, but I hope I was able to make that clear. Coming back, we're going to talk about Hong Kong. They are in turmoil right now. Sandy Rios in the morning.
A call to action from American Family Radio.
There's all kind of difficulty in the world, but as the Word of God says, If your brother's in need and you have it within your ability to respond to their need, how can you claim to have love if you allow them to go without? What greater need is there than the need to live? I know life is rough, but it don't have nothing to do with the baby. Don't kill the baby. Don't wait for preborn campaigns. Don't wait for legislation to be passed in your state legislature. Don't wait till Roe versus Wade is overturned. Respond now. I believe with everything in me that we can end this scourge regardless of what they do in the halls of Congress and the halls of the state legislature. Every single family, every single church, go to the local abortion clinics. Let them know that you have people in your churches, people in your family that are willing to take the babies home. They have families that have been dying to take a child home. Don't kill the babies.
Visit AFR.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Daniel Simmons, Assistant Secretary in the Office of Energy Efficiency and Renewable Energy. Mr. Simmons leads the office that promotes affordable and reliable energy to enhance America's economic growth and energy security. Jeremiah 29:11 reminds us of God's guidance in our plans. "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Daniel Simmons as he creates our nation's future energy plans. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A long row to hoe. That story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name's Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ. You are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There are a good number of folks around Dubuque, Iowa, who are unable to mow their grass or weed their gardens. Folks getting on up there in age. Others are disabled. So that sparked an idea among the teachers of the Alternative Learning Center, a school for at-risk teenagers. In order to graduate, students have to acquire physical education credits. But that does not mean the kids have to play dodgeball. Instead, they can volunteer to do yard work. Television station KWWL reported on the creative approach to phys ed. Instead of dodging balls or running laps, the kids are pulling weeds and cleaning gutters. And it turns out the kids really enjoy lending a helping hand and meeting people in the community. Not only that, you'd be surprised how many calories you can burn off hauling around a weed whacker. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Today, Hong Kongers protested in record-breaking numbers, a sea of humanity. Organizers say nearly 2 million marching across the city to voice their anger at their Beijing-backed leader, Carrie Lam, and her controversial bill that would allow suspected criminals to be extradited from Hong Kong to mainland China. People fear Beijing would use this to target its critics like politicians, dissidents, and journalists.
You can see the anger of the people of Hong Kong. We want the withdrawal of the bill.
Lam yesterday suspended work on the bill but refused to apologize for the violence earlier in the week when police came in with helmets and shields, pepper spray, and rubber bullets, at least 82 injured. Today's protest, the third major demonstration in just a week, capping a period of intense soul-searching for so many in this global financial center about their ability to have some type of autonomy from China. Many also galvanized by a protester yesterday who fell off a roof and died. Images and tributes to him all along the way into the night. Opposition lawmakers making a plea to the crowds to stay calm. Now, Hong Kong's leader, Carrie Lam, finally apologized late in a statement, but the people here want this bill that would allow extradition to mainland China to be withdrawn, and they want her to step down.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. That was a report from ABC News. And I know this is kind of a mystery to most people. What is Hong Kong? You've heard the name, but you might not quite understand it. It's a very fascinating place. Let me just tell you, on my first trip to China many years ago, Hong Kong was the first place we sat down, and we stayed for several days. And I will never forget. I will never forget it. It's an island. It is crammed full of people, but it is bustling. It is one of the financial centers of the entire universe. It's a separate from China, at least it was. It was British, occupied by the British and run by the British, and had British laws, British system. And in 1997, China was handed Hong Kong back. For what reason, I don't understand. But with the promise that for 50 years they could still be autonomous, they could have their own laws and rules and be free. And it's very ironic to me that we see so many now, what, 2 million, they said in that report, out of 7 million in the city, out in the streets, protesting. I saw a sign, give me liberty or give me death. Interesting to me that the people of Hong Kong should understand what's at stake. They've been a free, prosperous people, and now suddenly the grip of mainland China is becoming a reality to them, and they are kind of like us. You know, they do well, they're comfortable, and they are feeling the fear and the threat of losing their freedoms. Gordon Chang is joining us this morning. Gordon, of course, is an expert on China. His book, one of his books, is The Coming Collapse of China. You see him on television a lot. Gordon brings tremendous value with his wisdom and knowledge about the inner workings of China. And I've asked him to join us this morning. Good morning, Gordon. Thanks. Good morning, Gordon. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Sandy.
Yeah, you're a long way off this morning, so I appreciate you. I know you've got your hands full busy doing other things. But is there anything further about the situation? I don't mean the trouble. I just mean the relationship between Hong Kong and mainland China that you need to embellish before I ask you questions. Did I explain it as thoroughly enough?
Well, you certainly did. Hong Kong has now got a one country, two systems formula that's supposed to apply until 2047, which is 50 years after that July 1st, 1997 handover. And Hong Kong people obviously believe, and they're absolutely right, that China has been constricting that autonomy that they were promised. And so the extradition bill, which you referenced, is considered to be the last stand. And that's why people are actually taking to the streets in these incredibly big numbers. Nobody expected 1 million last Sunday. Nobody expected 2 million yesterday. And this is going to continue because the people in Hong Kong have made it clear that they are going to defend their way of life.
Now, we need to talk about what that bill actually means, Gordon, because it's kind of the extradition bill, but what does that mean to people? What are they so afraid of?
Well, they're afraid of China coming in and picking people off the streets of Hong Kong. Now, in the last 5 years or so, there have been a number of instances where Chinese agents have come into Hong Kong, snatched people, and brought them across the border. There were the instance of the booksellers who were selling books that China did not like, basically gossip books. And then the head of a bank was bundled out at the middle of the night from the Four Seasons Hotel, which was really quite a dramatic operation. But what the bill would do is increase dramatically the ability of other countries to take fugitives, quote-unquote, from Hong Kong. Today, Hong Kong has about 20 agreements with other jurisdictions that allow extradition, but China is not among them. This bill would expedite extradition procedures and would permit China to actually request people. And it's not just dissidents and journalists that are concerned, it's the business community. The business community is concerned about rapacious mainland partners using the extradition process to intimidate and coerce them.
You know what really strikes me, Gordon, is that right now in this country, we see our young people drifting toward this really nonchalant, casual view of socialism and really government control, government owning businesses and utilities and all that. That's what Bernie Sanders is talking about on a daily basis. And everyone, you know, no everyone, but a lot of young people think that's just wonderful. And the young people of Hong Kong are, I'm guessing, in the pictures I've seen, of course, it's hard to make out faces. Looks like a lot of young people out there who see very clearly what it means to be to move into a socialistic state. I'd just like a word, a comment from you about that.
Well, Ronald Reagan said that freedom is only one generation away from extinction, and that's absolutely right. And the reason is that people take for granted what our freedoms mean, and so they don't understand this. And this is just sort of natural evolution of society, but it's really dangerous for democracies, and we've got to understand this, that people don't understand the value of freedom, and they don't understand the value of free markets. So, you know, this is something that we cannot let down, you know, and we've got to fight for our society every day, just as the people of Hong Kong, the people of Venezuela, people of China are fighting for their societies.
It really does strike me that I've been watching a really interesting, it's not a documentary, it's a story, about the Russian Revolution. And the I did not realize, but I know now, that Russia had sort of an interim leader. I think they called him the supreme leader before the Bolsheviks really won. And one of the things they talk about is just the lies, the long view. And so it seems to me, and it seemed to me in 1997, Gordon, that China had no intention of letting Hong Kong remain free. How could the people of Hong Kong have even thought so? How could the British have even thought so? What? Why in the world did they release... Did Britain pull out in 1997 and give China control of Hong Kong again?
Well, that's a great question. Part of it is just the British were much more interested in maintaining good relations with Beijing than they were about the people in Hong Kong, who never got a chance to express in a vote how they felt about the handover. What happened is that Hong Kong was a British colony, as you mentioned. Part of it was ceded by China to Britain in perpetuity. That's Hong Kong Island and Kowloon Peninsula south of Boundary Street. The rest of Hong Kong, Kowloon north of Boundary Street and the outlying islands, were under a lease that was to expire in 1997. And people felt, and it's clear that the rest of Hong Kong, the part ceded to Britain in perpetuity, was not economically viable. For instance, it didn't have any water. So clearly something had to occur. But the people of Hong Kong never got the opportunity to express what they wanted. And that is the real sin here, that Britain and, I guess, the rest of the international community were not insistent that there be a referendum in Hong Kong.
Well, that does remind me. I mean, you take us back in time, and, of course, I'm remembering who was president then and how America was... really under this delusion that we were going to do trade with China, we're going to be friendly, and just the lack of understanding of the patience and long-term thinking of the communists in every country, really, but China's been one of the longer communist governments. And that reminds me of the way Carrie Lam, she is the, what's her title, president? What's she?
She's Prime the Minister? Hong Kong chief executive, the top political officer in Hong Kong.
All right, and so she is, just to be clear, the pick of Beijing, and she's sort of apologizing and backing off, but it's all like a game, isn't it, Gordon? She doesn't really mean that, and she doesn't really intend to stop this, does she?
Well, she is, as you point out, she's Beijing's pick, and she believes that her constituency are not the people in Hong Kong, but Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler. She's the fourth chief executive. Her three predecessors were failures as well. And the issue is not so much Carrie Lam as an individual or as a leader. It's just the nature of the system in which she finds herself. That job is impossible because Beijing demands things that people in Hong Kong just don't want. And so she's in an impossible situation. Now, that's not to excuse her. She put herself in this. She ran for chief executive. She knew exactly what was going on. So she's accountable, of course, but it's really the nature of the system in Hong Kong that is the real evil here.
I was reading a fascinating article. This was published by Washington Post, actually, and it's talking about how the protesters are having to find ways to outwit the surveillance state. And by surveillance state, of course, China has become very sophisticated. Most Western countries have too, but I think China has taken this even a notch further with their artificial intelligence tracking of individuals, their social credit score system. And so what I'm reading, Gordon, is that young people are deleting their apps left and right. They are not taking pictures. They're not capturing faces. They're covering their faces. They're suggesting people have to go cashless to leave no digital footprint. And it goes on and on. And this is the reality of what happens to free people when they hand their lives over to these faceless, nameless entities that collect information on them. That's the scariest part to me.
Well, yeah, and let's be clear. You know, we talk about China as authoritarian, but under Xi Jinping, it's moving back to totalitarianism. And with the social credit system that'll be in place next year nationwide, or at least that's what they plan, that is a long way to establishing totalitarian control, because people get a constantly updated score based upon a number of behaviors, including their political beliefs. And they won't be able to buy plane tickets, buy a home, send their kids to private school, all the rest of it. And so there is a real attempt to impose the strictest of controls. And that's why, as you mentioned, kids in Hong Kong are deleting apps and going to a offline existence. And they need to do that in order to prevent the surveillance state from learning about them.
And then one last thing, Gordon, that affects, oh, there's so much to talk to you about, but I do have to ask you about this. Right now we're in this battle over 5G. And for most people listening, when you use your cell phone, wherever you go, the reason that you can get service is because of this network called 4G. China and others have developed 5G, which is even more expensive and more, you know, more powerful. And so there are two companies. There's Huawei, which is a Chinese company, and there's an American company called Qualcomm, and they're battling over who's going to control 5G. Gordon, just say a word about what that means to the world and what it means to us, this battle.
Yeah, 5G, the fifth generation of wireless communications, is more than just a slight improvement over the existing 4G networks. It is the Internet of Things. So 5G networks will be able to lock and unlock your front door, drive your car, operate your pacemaker. It is just pervasive. And China intends to control it with Huawei technologies. President Trump is trying to slow Huawei down, but he may actually go back on his attempts to strangle Huawei. And he should not do that, because this is a national security risk for the United States. Huawei is a danger to free societies everywhere, and we have to bear a lot of costs because we've got to put that company down.
Okay, so that's just one huge factor in the battle with China now. And the second thing, though, Gordon, if Hong Kong should fall in the sense of really being absorbed completely by mainland China, coming under domination, losing their freedoms, what would that do to financial institutions around the globe?
Well, what would happen would be financial companies and institutions would probably take a lot of their operations out of Hong Kong. So you'd see stuff going to New York. Regional headquarters for multinationals would probably disperse to places like Singapore, Taipei, maybe even Tokyo. So it would become no longer this international cosmopolitan city that we have today. It would become, as the phrase goes, just another Chinese city.
So China, really, it seems to me, Gordon, unless I'm missing something, would not be gaining much except more people, you know, 7 million people on an island. They would not be actually absorbing all the financial resources of Hong Kong. Is that short-sighted, or is that true?
I think that's right. I mean, but you've got to remember that for communists like Xi Jinping, they don't want to destroy Hong Kong. They want to keep it prosperous. But the most important thing, they want and demand control. Because if you've got people in Hong Kong, they can inspire people in the mainland itself. And
yes,
that is, of course, unacceptable for them.
Right, to be free. An example of freedom. We can't have that. It's amazing. It really is just amazing to watch all of this develop. And I do feel like the Western world is really emulating it in our own way. People have just forgotten. But the people of Hong Kong haven't. They are out on the streets fighting. And we need to pray for them. Gordon Chang, thank you always for your time. I appreciate it so much. Sandy
thank
Rios
you,
in the morning on AFR Talk.
Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Family is the first institution established by the Creator, God. This institution is under relentless attack. Our society no longer values the structure that God established to produce successful citizens, productive people, and healthy children. We are in a downward spiral. Silence is not an option. The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference, June 20th through 22nd, will equip the body to engage our culture boldly with truth. A collection of voices have been assembled to speak to the most pressing issues of our day. Go to AFR.net or UrbanFamilyTalk.com to register.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Ever wonder what happens when we die? In a scientific study, Dr. Sam Parnia says our brains keep working a while after our heart stops. People brought back to life in the OR were aware what was happening after being pronounced dead. However, when death is final, the Bible says the followers of Jesus go into the presence of God, while those who reject God's salvation and die in their sins await judgment day in a real place called hell. The only safe way to face eternity is with Jesus. I'm Pastor John Miller. Visit me at churchontherock.org.
There's a good chance you'll hear some marriage vows being said in the month of June, but did you know that Christ often used the analogy of weddings and marriage to help point heavenly truths greater than matrimony? I'm Charles Morris. Discover what Jesus taught this week on Haven Today. The series will be called To Have and To Hold.
Haven Today, weekday mornings at 4:30 Central on American Family Radio. Listen online at AFR.net.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. One of the lies our culture tells is that marriage is fine for people who want that sort of thing, but since it's purely a matter of personal preference, we shouldn't have public policies that encourage marriage. Don't let them lie to you. Research from 90 countries reveals that two-parent families are more important to a nation's well-being than anything, including population size and education. High shares of married two-parent families increase a nation's gross domestic product, household savings, educational attainment, and reduce crime at the same time. True patriots will want to see policies that encourage marriage over cohabitation, discourage sexual experimentation, and protect children from the grisly impact of no-fault divorce. Marriage is good for America, plus it's just plain fun.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. On Friday, 600 American companies publicly opposed President Trump's tariffs on Chinese imports. While this China lobby professes opposition to Beijing's unfair trade practices, they don't want him to use that countermeasure to address them. The day before, Senator Marco Rubio raised an alarm about Beijing's exploitation of our stock markets to underwrite its companies, including some engaged in unrestricted warfare against us. The senator challenged index fund MSCI about its practice of helping PRC businesses raise billions of dollars here without the sort of transparency and risk disclosure required of American corporations. The effect of this practice is to expand enormously the China lobby by recruiting millions of Americans whose pension funds can then be manipulated by the Chinese Communist Party. President Trump needs our support for standing firm against this foreign adversary and their allies here. This is Frank Affney. Learn more at presentdangerchina.org.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. I just another word about Hong Kong. I will never forget. That was really, really my first experience in China. I actually ended up in China many times. But I remember going and getting up in the early morning hours and running. I used to do a lot of running. And I remember hearing the barges and the fog horns, you know, in the bay, was just the most peaceful, beautiful sound. And people were in the parks all over doing Tai Chi. Hong Kong had as crowded as it was, it had a wonderful feel about it. Great church, international church there was wonderful. The people of Hong Kong are wonderful. And they're so international, you know, people from all over the world. Not just Chinese lived in Hong Kong. And it's very sad. It's very sad to see what's happening to them. Does it not remind you of, and then not as far along, but the people of Venezuela who are starving and who were rioting in the streets to stop the totalitarian move there? So you think of what we face here and how our young people just are too brainwashed to even understand. Actually, I was going to talk about something else, but I will talk about something else because I want you to hear from Bernie Sanders last night and the last several days. You know, he's had a lot to say, and he is one of the chief propagandists of the communist movement. He is. He just is. And it's frightening to see how well he's doing in the polls. And, of course, the other Democratic candidates, many of them, same thing. Same thing. Their policies are communist policies. To nationalize things, to do away with privatizing, to demonize people that are successful in business, to pit people against each other. But I'm getting ahead of myself because what I wanted to say was thank you to Christian Adams for filling in for me. Isn't he terrific? I know he did a great job, and I so appreciate him filling in for me, and Fred Jackson as well. Fred does a great job, and so I just want to say publicly how grateful I am for them to host the show for me in my absence. There are a lot of things. I will just tell you a few things about the White House briefing. I can't go into everything, but some highlights that I thought you might find interesting. Of course, the agreement, the USMCA agreement with Mexico and Canada is very important to businesses and to sort it out so that we have good trading relationships with Mexico and Canada. And it looks as though there are 30 Democrats who are ready to vote for this, which astounded me, to be honest with you. And they need five more, and they think that it will go through. A lot of reminders of there are the president, since he has been in office, initially, the Obama administration used regulations to control people. It was through the regulation procedure that he passed, instituted DACA. There wasn't a law where the Congress passed some law. It was these agencies started passing rules, and they started enforcing these rules as though they were law. People were sent to prison. Farmers had to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars of fines for, you know, not treating their ponds properly on their own land. Remember the Gibson guitar factory that was overrun by a SWAT team because they had imported one tiny little piece of the guitar of wood, and it was breaking international law. And the SWAT team came into the Gibson guitar factory and raided it in their black uniforms. It's just amazing what Barack Obama did. So President Trump has been, since he's entering the White House, for every regulation that his administration institutes, they have thrown out two. Well, it's now moved to 14. They've done away with 14 Obama regulations for every one they've instituted. And it's been a tremendous lift of burden to businesses. That's why one of the reasons that business is flourishing. And one of those regulations that has not been done away with yet was the subsidizing of electrical vehicles. I did not know we were still subsidizing Tesla and GM. Did you know that? By thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, millions, I guess, thousands per car. And did you know that electrical vehicles are still only 1.5% of sales? And yet when you buy a Chrysler, you are paying a lot more money for your car than you were. And that's because a lot of the money you're paying to Chrysler is going to Tesla and GM for the electric cars. It's bizarre. And the law, the regulation is still in place. The president is trying to reverse that. And guess who's fighting him? Guess who's fighting him? The other auto manufacturing, their boards of directors. Do you remember when we talked to Justin Danhoff about how far left the boards of these major corporations had moved? Well, they have been completely co-opted for the most part. I wouldn't say 100% of every major company, but lots of them, probably most of them. And so the only car company that's siding with the president on doing away with you subsidizing electric cars with your car purchases is Fiat Chrysler. Fiat Chrysler, the only company. The rest of them are on board with, subsidizing electric cars. One of the things I heard was that the average American, or the Americans are driving on average a car that's 12 years old because The prices of cars have gone up so much people can't afford new ones, and that's because, in large part, because we're paying for the electric cars. Is that not sick? And that's just one thing that's happening. I could tell you a lot more things. I found out some really interesting things about fetal tissue research. The president, through HHS, through his agency, Health and Human Services, has withdrawn government funding from using fetal tissue for experimentation. Our researchers can no longer purchase fetal tissue. That means like babies who've been aborted, or how are they obtained this tissue? They've been using little unborn babies to do experimentation with, and that's going to stop under President Trump's administration. There's a lot more I could tell you, but that's part of the briefing that I was in on Friday. So Bernie Sanders, here we just heard this report about Hong Kong. We saw in the pictures, if you see it, if you've watched it, 2 million people in the streets yesterday. One of them, I told you, holding up a sign, "Give me liberty or give me death." Anybody remember that? That was one of our founding fathers in the fight for freedom here in this country. You see, people do really want to be free. I realize that the other opposite pull of that is people want free things. They want to be taken care of. But when push comes to shove and they start being bossed around and having no freedom whatsoever about their life, they don't like that so much. But that's the part our kids just don't get. They don't get it yet. We have to teach them that with real freedom comes responsibility for your personal life, comes responsibility to work and pay for your own health care insurance and for your own car without subsidies, for your own college, paying for things, taking responsibility, the reality that you can't do maybe everything that you want to do if you don't have the resources, or you get a better job, or you work harder so that you can get it. That's the American way, but that's the vision of things that we're losing. Well, Bernie Sanders is stepping into the gap, and he's promising the world. And one of the things he's promising is political revolution. Let's listen.
Chris, according to Federal Reserve data, the average worker in America today, despite a huge increase in productivity and technology, is earning exactly the same wages that he or she earned 45 years ago. In the last 30 years, the top 1% has seen an increase in their wealth of $21 trillion, while the bottom half of America has seen an actual decline in their wealth of some $800 billion. In other words, we have an economy today that is working phenomenally well for the top 1%, while the working class of this country is being decimated. Meanwhile, it seems to me that if we're going to bring about real change in this country, that means health care to all people, raising the minimum wage to a living wage, making sure that all of our young people can afford to go to college, dealing with climate change, dealing with criminal justice reform. We need fundamental change. We need a political revolution. We need millions of people, working class people, whose lives have been decimated for the last 45 years to stand up to Wall Street, to stand up to the insurance companies and the drug companies. A political revolution, that is what I believe in.
Yeah, Bernie is the classic communist. Will you just stay with me for a second? If you study communist movements in ages past, this is what they do. They agitate. They set people against each other. They create what they call, what Marx called, class envy. So you poor people on the bottom, look at what these rich people, look what they've got. Look what they're doing. And you're suffering. They're taking all this stuff and you've got nothing. This is the narrative. This is what they do. It's human nature. It works like a charm. Could I just point out that one of the reasons he's talking about that the average wage is not any different than it was 45 years ago? Could you please understand this is an average? This is factoring in, for one thing, all of the illegal immigrants who come into this country and are working for nothing. That doesn't really mean that if you're a worker in a mine, or if you're, checker in a grocery store even, that your wages haven't increased significantly, because they have. This is how they skew and lie. But what they want you to hear is, oh, you worker. And worker is, of course, a communist word. You're not a person. You're not an individual. You're a worker. You know, workers of the world arise. You know, this is what communism teaches. It's envy. It's class. Oh, they've got, well, I deserve, I should have what they have. I mean, if you don't understand this, if I'm not making it clear enough, could I please ask you to look, you can find it if you just Google some, or look on Netflix about some story about the, for instance, the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Try that one. As I said earlier in the program, I've been watching one. It's not a documentary. It's a story. But it talks about the latter days before when the king was, you know, the czar was murdered, his family was murdered, and the chaos ensued. And the white Russians, who were the loyalists to Russia, were trying to maintain control. The Leninites, the Bolsheviks, were stirring up the people with these same kinds of conversations. Do you see what they have? You know, it's your, you deserve that. They shouldn't have that. That's how it went. And then, of course, they had what they called a supreme leader who was trying to keep Russia together while the Bolsheviks were, you know, growing their revolt. And there's one scene in this particular movie I was watching where the supreme leader, former, is being interrogated by the Bolsheviks. And they're sitting around a table and they say, the supreme leader is actually being very honest about how his men deserted and how he said, you spread lies among them. And they look at the supreme leader and they say, Kolchak, I think is his name. And they say, well, we promised that the soldiers bread and meat and safe warm houses. You could have done the same if you had promised it. And the supreme leader says, Kolchak says, I can't promise what I can't deliver. You see, but this is what communism does. This is actually what the Islamists do, too, in many cases in other areas of the country, of the world, because it preys on our desire to be taken care of and our desire, our willingness to believe that we are the victim. That's what they do. So Bernie Sanders wants a political revolution based on nonsense, because we know that the unemployment rate is so far down, the economy is booming, and yet he claims it's a tragedy, and some people will believe him. Then he goes on to talk about the wonderful things he'd do with our medical care. Let's listen.
The Liberal Urban Institute assessed your plan back in 2016 and said the cost would be $32 trillion over 10 years. And you've talked about paying for that through a variety of taxes.
But Chris,
if I may just finish, sir, a variety of taxes on individuals and on companies. But isn't it the essence of big government when you say, we know better, and even if you, and there are, as we pointed out, tens of millions of people who like getting their insurance from their employer, you say, no, that's not right. We're going to decide what the plan is, and you're going to do it the way we tell you to.
Well, not quite that way. First of all, you use the number $32 trillion, which is roughly probably right. That sounds like a lot of money, but you know what happens if we keep the current system, which is the most wasteful and expensive system in the world, over a 10-year period, there are estimates that the cost will be $50 trillion. So no, the healthcare costs go up. Every study shows that Medicare for All will be less expensive than continuing the current dysfunctional healthcare. Medicare itself, as a health insurance program, is far, far more popular than our private insurance companies. People don't
all
like
right, I'm going to interrupt him. We don't have time to hear it all. But basically, it goes on to say you'll be able to keep your doctors. That's what Medicare does. And everybody will be taken care of. We'll pay for everything. Oh, we're going to pay for college. We're going to privatize, hints, the utility privatize. We're going to take over the utility companies with the government. Listen, don't listen to this and tell your children this is dangerous. We don't want to go the way of Hong Kong or Venezuela. We must warn our children and we must teach them. Educate yourselves, educate them. This is Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.